So they shall eat, and they shall have some left over. And we're kind of good at disparaging what's left over. Even the disciples here in the gospel say, well, what good is this? What we have, what good is it? We never fully trust that who we are is enough and what we have is enough. Gifts, talent, wisdom, collective energy. What good is this, really? But we're invited to a sense of abundance, to knowing that who we are is absolutely abundantly enough, and that what we have is plenty. It was a great privilege in my life many years ago to be a chaplain on a prison island in Mexico called Islas Marias, and it's kind of the Alcatraz of Mexico. It takes about 13 hours by boat to get there from Mazatlan. And I was a chaplain there, and I lived in a kind of a remote part of the island where we had about 800 colonos, or inmates, and every day I'd make brick with them and in this brick-making place, and every night I'd eat with them. And it was the worst food I'd ever had in my life. I lost 40 pounds. I'm thinking of returning. There was a guy I knew named Carlitos, and he was kind of a character, and we made bricks side by side, each of us, every day. And he said, today after work, meet me at 3 in front of the lieutenant's house. And the lieutenant was the meanest man perhaps I've ever met, and he was quite mean to the inmates and a task driver and would beat them, actually. And he and his family lived in a beautiful home with a kind of a fenced area with a garden inside the fence. Vegetables, fruits, flowers. And Carlos said, I'll meet you at 3 in front of the lieutenant's house. Bring your backpack, which should have been my first clue. And so there I am with Cara de Menso waiting for him to show up. And he does. And he says, wait here for 1 second. He hops the fence, goes in there, and he lifts his shirt like this, and he starts cutting all these vegetables really quickly, carrots and lettuce and tomatoes and zucchini, and he's filling his shirt. I'm going, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, hurry. And I can't, you know, the lieutenant's going to beat me along with this guy, you know. So finally he hops the fence and he has this whole shirt filled with all these fresh vegetables, beautiful vegetables, and he puts them in my backpack, of course. And we hightail it up to the hills where he has a little pot and he starts a fire. And he has a sack. And the sack seems to be alive, and that's because it has a live iguana in it that he previously captured, and it's really prohibited to capture iguanas on this island. So he guts the thing, and yes, it tastes like chicken, and so he's cutting it with vegetables and stuff, and he throws water, and it's just the most amazing-smelling kind of stew, iguana stew. And of course, the smell wafts, and one of the inmates comes and says, what are you doing? And I'm expecting Carlos to say, get out of here. And he doesn't. He says, welcome, we're having a caldo de iguana. And the guy says, hey, I got something back in my canton. So he goes back to his dorm or house, and he brings a little piece of paper that has salt, kind of coarse salt, and he gives it. We throw it in the pot, and Carlos deftly adds some more water. Another guy comes and says, what are you doing? Welcome, welcome, welcome. Come over. There's plenty, there's plenty. And the guy goes back, and he brings a kind of a rusty can of tomato paste or something. Once we figure out how to open it, we throw that in, you know, and a third guy comes and welcome, welcome. There's going to be plenty. And he goes back and he gets a shriveled kind of jalapeno, you know, that we dice up and throw in. We ended up having like 12 inmates, guys who are considered the lowest of the low. And we sat around and we ate the most delicious caldo de iguana. Everybody brought their sabor, their flavor to the pot, and there was plenty, more than enough, and everybody ate with some left over. It's about abundance. It's about believing what God says is true about us, that we can do that, that there's enough here. In fact, there's plenty. I will admit something to you. I occasionally, it happens from time to time, once in a while, I find myself embarrassed by the Roman Catholic Church. I know I'm alone in feeling this. So there I am last Saturday in New York City at St. Patrick's Cathedral, and I walk in, and it's the Saturday Vigil Mass, and I'm sitting there, and it's a goodly crowd, and I, at the cantor, not as good as here, but pretty good, and I'm singing along with her, and it's a nice experience, you know. Well, the Lamb of God comes. I hadn't seen this in probably 50 years. Suddenly, out of nowhere, seven priests show up. And they're about to give out communion. They're all vested, all ordained male clergy. There was one layman. He was probably in the diaconate program. And it wasn't enough. It, ordained male clergy, it wasn't enough. The lines were impossibly long. They snaked through the cathedral. They didn't have the cup. They just had the Eucharist. And it wasn't enough. But I looked out at the congregation. I said, we are enough. What we have is enough. But it's just folks wanting to live the priesthood of their own baptism, men and women, plenty. To say that what we have is enough does not disparage the power of God, it fulfills it. And to say that what we have is enough does not diminish the church, it enhances it. But we have to believe that we're being offered abundance all the time. That who we are is exactly right and absolutely enough. And when you have enough, you have plenty. We have a hard time believing that about ourselves sometimes. For 25 years, I've worked with gang members, you know, and that's sort of the task often enough with gang members is to believe that who they are is enough, having been culturally disparaged over and over again. I was in my office many years ago at Homeboy Industries, and a homie named Horacio called me about 3 p.m. He had just been released from prison after a 5-year stretch. I'd known him since he was a little kid, growing up in the projects. And he was telling me that he no longer wants to have anything to do with his gang or his barrio or his neighborhood, and he's far away. And we're going on about how we'd love to see each other. And then he says, let me just cut to the cheese, which I don't recall I've ever heard that expression used exactly that way. And he says, you know, I came home and my lady took off with Sancho, with some other guy, and she burned all my clothes. I think she may have been mad at me. And so I don't have any clothes. So I cut to the cheese and I said, look, after work, I'll come pick you up. We'll buy you some clothes. And Horacio is a big, huge, hulking guy, huge, huge guy, large and in charge, and you wouldn't want to meet him in a dark alley or even a well-lit one, you know, and a kind of a scary-looking vato. And so I go to pick him up at the designated place. I expect to park and go find him, but there he is waiting for me, standing on the corner. And when he sees me, he does this kind of yippy-skippy, glad-to-see-you thing, which is very incongruous given the size of this character. And he flies into my car, and he gives me a big abrazo. And he says, when I saw you right now, I got all happy. I said, well, so did I. So we go to JCPenney's, and I tell him how much money he can spend, and he, de volada, has all his clothes, and he's holding all his clothes, and we're in line. We got people ahead of us and a lot of people behind us. And I should tell you, as the homies say, they would say that Horacio has a loud-ass voice, really loud. And so whenever he was talking, everybody in line would turn and look, and then they go, don't make eye contact, don't make eye contact. And so at one point we're in line, and he points at this couple with a young boy, and he says, hey, you see that couple over there? Of course, everybody in line looked, you know. Well, I walked up to that guy, and I said, hey, do I know you? And the guy looked at me all paniqueado, like he was going to have a heart attack, and he said, no, I don't know you. And his ruca with the little morrita, she grabs the kid and she says, please, we don't know you. And then I looked more closer and I said, oh, my bad. I thought you were somebody else. And when I said that, they got all relaxed. Damn, G. Do I look that scary? No, pretty much, yeah. And everybody in line laughed. We went out to dinner and we talked. And he said, can I tell you something? I'm afraid. I don't want to go back. And I said, well, you've got such a great heart. If you stay close to that, you'll be okay. And we said goodnight. Well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call, and it's Horacio. And he says what homies always say when they call at 3 o'clock in the morning, did I wake you? I go, no, he's kind of hoping you might be calling me. And he said, I have to ask you a question. And he wasn't drunk, he was sober. And I said, you go ahead. And he gets very still and quiet, and he says, you know, all my life, I've seen you as my father, but now I have to ask you this question. Have I been your son? And I said, oh, hell yeah. And he went, whew, I thought so. And then he started to cry. And he said, then you will be my father, and I will be your son, and nothing will separate us, right? I said, that's right. Horacio did not discover that night that he had a father. He discovered that he was a son worth having. Big difference. He discovered that what he had was enough. In fact, it was plenty. He discovered that he was exactly what God had in mind when God made him. These readings are about abundance that awaits us the minute we recognize and cease to disparage what we have and who we are. And welcome the fact that we have leftovers, that we have plenty to go around.